I'm a nut. I'm a nut. My life don't ever get in a rut. The head on my shoulders is sort of loose, and I ain't got sense. God gave a goose. Lord, I ain't crazy, but I'm a nut. Is it wetter underwater if you're there when it rains? Is it shorter to New York than it is by plane? Between myself and I wonder who's the dumber. Is it hotter down south than it is in the summer?
Welcome to the second SWN edition of Nutty But Nice, SWN standing for Spoken Word Nuttiness. And we kick off this SWN edition the same way we kicked off the first one, with the master of double talk. Here's Al Kelly.
And drum and bongo, it's Dizzy Satellite. I am here to clear out the side main in your amplifiers and down the light your dull needles. In other words, make your hi-fi loud with these and your lo-fi stray with a habit drop.
Crazy, man, crazy.
I'm very happy that you like me so far and bring you the style that you have a failure until the last.
Not that kind of crazy. I mean, you're real gone.
And furthermore, as long as you find the same style, you'll be with a habit that ever happens to you.
I'm not sure what the actual title of that bit is, so I'll simply call it Don't Ask. I am Ronnie Allen, and on today's show, every recording that you hear will primarily be of the spoken word variety. You might hear some music, as you did in that particular whatever it is that we opened with, but primarily it is going to be the spoken word. We're going to have routines about airlines, about doctors, about the national pastime, amazing and very funny recordings. And oh yes, we have something really special. A segment from an episode of a TV game show, which I believe to be the funniest moments in game show history. As I salute a gentleman who sadly passed away a few days ago. But right now, speaking of doctors, here's a couple of routines about that subject, leading off with Woody Allen.
I had once a pain in the chestal area. Now, I was sure it was heartburn, you know, because that time I was married and my wife was cooking with her Nazi recipes, you know, chicken Himmler. I didn't want to pay $25 to have it reaffirmed by some medic that I had heartburn. But I was worried because it was in the chestal area. Then it turns out my friend, Eggs Benedict, has a pain in his chestal area in the same exact spot. And I figured if I could get Eggs to go to the doctor, I could figure out what's wrong with me at no charge. So I con Eggs. And he goes. Turns out he's got heartburn. Cost him $25. And I feel great. Because I figure I beat the medic out of 25 big ones, you know. I call up Eggs 2 days later. He died. I check into a hospital immediately. Have a battery of tests run, x-rays. Turns out I got heartburn. Cost me $110. Now I'm furious. I run to Egg's mother. And I say, did he suffer much? And she said, no, was quick. Car hit him and that was it.
Scalpel.
Scalpel.
Gauze.
Gauze.
More gauze.
More gauze.
More gauze.
More gauze.
More gauze.
More gauze.
A little more gauze.
We don't have any more gauze.
That's all the gauze?
Yeah. I don't know what happened. We had a small roll of gauze.
Give me a sponge.
Sponge.
Clamp.
You have the clamp.
Suture.
Yes, the suture.
Edith.
Yes?
I love you.
Please, please.
Sponge.
You have the sponge.
Give me another sponge. I want two sponges.
All the sponges.
I have two sponges.
We don't. We only have two sponges.
This is terrible when we wrangle this way. Why do you avoid me?
We have two sponges.
Why do you avoid me in the hall?
I don't avoid you in the hall.
You turned your back at the coffee machine.
I didn't turn my back.
You deliberately turned your back.
Excuse me, the oxygen is failing.
Edith, don't change the subject.
But it's failing.
Well, turn it up.
Well, I'm trying to.
Is there somebody else?
Is there something you'd like? A suture? A sponge? Something?
Is there somebody else?
I don't care to discuss it now,
thank
you.
It's Pinsky, isn't it?
I don't care to talk about it.
I saw you in the cafeteria.
I just don't care to talk about it, Dr. Harris. Now, would you like anything else? Otherwise, I'd like to go.
Go in the middle of an operation?
Well, I have nothing else to hand you. You've got it all in the patient.
Edith, what have I done to hurt you this way?
You haven't done anything to hurt me. I just wish you wouldn't badger me.
Badger you?
I need time to think. I told you that before.
I don't know you like this. You're cold. You're diffident.
Because you badger me.
I haven't badgered
you. You're only making me run away.
Is it badgering you to tell you I love you? Is that badgering you?
Please do not tell me over and over in the cafeteria and operations.
All right, I'm sorry. Give me a needle.
Needle.
Thread.
Would you like me to thread the needle?
I don't even know what I'm doing. Yes, thread it, please.
All right. Catgut?
Yes.
Cheer up. Come on, I have a little joke for you. Knock, knock.
Oh.
Come on. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Catgut.
Catgut who?
Catgut your tongue? Oh, come on.
Edith, why are you torturing me?
I'm not. I was trying to cheer you up.
Well, there's only one way you can cheer me up, and that's to say yes.
Please, please, Dr. Harris, not now. This is how you drive me away every time.
Put your finger on this knot, please.
All right, but don't do anything funny.
I'm not doing anything funny. I'm sewing up the patient. All now right. It's you who starts these things.
All right, all right.
Oh, I do love you so.
Oh, please, please, let go of my finger. I knew you were going to do this.
Please, no, don't pull back. I do. I love you. I love you.
Let go of my finger.
Don't pull back. You're pulling the stick.
Please, Dr. Harris, stop.
Edith, it is Pinsky, isn't it?
I don't want to talk about it now.
It's very important to me to know whether it's Pinsky or not.
Give me time to check. Now the oxygen is failing again.
Let it fail. I'm sick of this torture.
Please, so, Dr. Harris, everyone is looking at you.
I'm not going to finish this operation unless you say yes.
Dr. Harris, you're being impossible.
I'm not going to finish this operation unless you say yes, Edith.
Dr. Harris, this patient will die.
I've been tortured long enough. Yes or no, which is it going to be?
This is absolute blackmail.
I don't care. I don't care what lengths I go to anymore. All is fair and all that.
Dr. Harris, you're a doctor. A doctor. Doesn't that mean anything to you,
yes,
a surgeon?
I'm a doctor, Edith, but I'm a man also, and I will not go on with this operation until you give me your answer, and it better be yes.
I have no choice. Yes.
All right, then. Clamp, darling.
From the LP, Mike Nichols and Elaine May examine doctors. That was that gifted comedy team doing a routine called A Little More Gauze. And before that, you heard Woody Allen doing Eggs Benedict. I am Ronnie Allen, no relation to Woody. This is Nutty But Nice. You know, when you think of musical parodies and satire, you think of Homer and Jethro, Alan Sherman, Weird Al Yankovic, Spike Jones, and, of course, the man I'm about to play right now. Of all the recordings that this man ever made, this was his most successful. A great takeoff on a very well-known TV show.
The legend you are about to hear is true. Only the needle should be changed to protect the record.
This is the countryside. My name is St. George. I'm a knight. Saturday, July 10th, 8:05 p.m. I was working out of the castle on the night watch when a call came in from the chief. A dragon had been devouring maidens. Homicide. My job. Slay him. You call me, chief?
Yeah, it's the dragon again, devouring maidens. The king's daughter may be next.
Mm-hmm. You got a lead?
Nothing much to go on. Say, did you take that .45 automatic into the lab to have him check on it?
Yeah. You were right.
I was right?
Yeah. He was a gun. 8:22 p.m. I talked to one of the maidens who had almost been devoured. Could I talk to you, ma'am?
Who are you?
I'm St. George, ma'am. Homicide, ma'am. I want to ask you a few questions, ma'am. I understand you're almost devoured by the man. Is that right, Dragon?
It was terrible. He breathed fire on me. He banged me already.
How can I be sure of that, ma'am?
Believe me, I got it straight from the dragon's mouth.
11:45 p.m. I rode over the King's Highway. I saw a man. Stopped to talk to him. Pardon me, sir. Could I talk to you for just a minute, sir?
Sure, I don't mind.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a knave.
Didn't they pick you up on a 903 last year for stealing tarts?
Yeah? So what, do you want to make a federal case out of it?
No, sir. We heard it was a dragon operating in this neighborhood. We just want to know if you've seen him.
Sure, I've seen him.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe him for me?
What's to describe? You see one dragon, you've seen them all.
Would you try and remember, sir, just for the record? We just want to get the facts, sir.
Well, he was, you know, he had orange polka dots.
Yes, sir.
Purple feet, breathing fire and smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And one big bloodshot eye right in the middle of his forehead, and, like that.
Notice anything unusual about him?
No, he's just a run-the-mill dragon, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, you can go now.
Hey, by the way, how are you going to catch him?
I thought you'd never ask. A dragon net. 3:05 p.m. I was riding back into the courtyard to make my report to the lab. Then it happened. It was a dragon.
Hey, I'm the fire-breathing dragon. You must be St. George, right?
Yes, sir.
I see you got one of them new 45 caliber swords.
That's about the size of it.
You slay me.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about.
What do you mean?
I'm taking in a 502. You figure it out.
What's the charge?
Devouring maidens out of season.
Out of season? You never pinned that rap on me. Do you hear me, cop?
Yeah, I hear you. I got you in a 412, too.
A 412? What's a 412?
Overacting. Let's go.
On September the 5th, the dragon was tried and convicted. His fire was put out, and his maiden devouring license revoked. Maiden devouring out of season is punishable by a term of not less than 50 or more than 300 years.
Back in 1953, that recording by Stan Freeberg called St. George and the Dragonette was at number one on the chart for four consecutive weeks. And the flip side, which was called Little Blue Riding Hood, got to number nine on the chart. Not too shabby. Right now, we got a couple of telephone routines, leading off with a lady who was on our first spoken word novelty show. As was the case then, this cut is from her album, This Is a Recording. We got Lily Tomlin. What follows is obvious.
Gracious good afternoon. This is Miss Tomlin of your telephone company. How may I, in all humble servitude, be of assistance? You're trying to reach your husband at his office and keep getting a busy signal. Well, perhaps he's using his instrument. An hour and a half. Well, I will check to see if there is mechanical failure. Mrs. Norman, that phone is in usage. Your husband is making an overseas call to Korea, I believe. Oh, he was stationed there during the war. Must have been lonely for you. Just a minute, let me listen now. Mr. Norman and some woman are talking about your son in Korea. Oh, excuse me, Mrs. Norman, but Bok Choi seems a strange name for a boy from Pleasantville. You say you don't have a son in Korea? Well, that's odd. Mr. Norman does. Oh, no. Oh, Mrs. Norman. Oh, Mrs. Norman, I am so sorry. Oh, I am so sorry that you had to learn it this way. But we at the phone company do like to keep families in touch. No. Mrs. Norman, listen to Ernestine. Turn off the gas. I'll plug you into his line and you can hear every word the bastard's saying. Listen. Oh? Can you hear all right? Oh, did you hear that? The things they do in Korea you wouldn't even think of doing here. No, Mrs. Norman, I've got a great idea. Mrs. Norman, believe me, it's just like a man. They're all animals. Let me call up my cousin. He's a divorce lawyer. We can hook Mr. Norman before he gets off the line. Henry, this is Ernestine. I've got a live one for you. The wife, she's a wonderful woman. I've got her on hold. The husband, I'm not too sure. I think he's with the government. Seems very active in foreign relationships. I'll hook it up so you can get a voice print to use in court. Mrs. Norman, I'm back. Listen, I think we can get you the house, the car, half the business, and the kid in Korea. No. Mrs. Norman, no, don't thank me, dear. Not nonsense. Don't. It'll be on your next bill.
Hidey-ho, Mr. O here. It's Mr. Obvious Show. I am your host, Mr. Obvious. Let's go right to the phone. Hello, Mr. Obvious Show.
Hi, is this Mr. Obvious?
Yes, it is. Are you calling from your car, sir?
Oh, yeah, as a matter of fact, how could you tell?
Well, I hear the car phone there.
Oh, well, yeah, that's just what it is. Huh. Mr. Obvious, you're a wizard.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm calling from my car phone.
Right.
Got one of these, helps me do business, but... Well, I'll tell you what I was calling about. I just, first of all, I wanted to say dittos on that sunshield idea you had a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yes. For those of you who didn't hear that program, a gentleman was having trouble with his car getting far too hot during the day. He'd leave it to go to work or whatever, run some errands, and he'd come back, and his car would be very hot. He couldn't touch the steering wheel, so old Mr. Obvious suggested a sunshield there in the front window, and it worked really well for him. So,
Yeah, Mr. Obvious, I tried that same suggestion.
Uh-huh.
Went out and got a really cute little Garfield sunshield.
Those are nice.
Oh, mm-hmm. It works great.
Uh-huh.
Car's,
okay.
Car's nice and cool.
Oh, great. Thanks for calling, sir.
No, wait, Mr. Obvious.
Yeah?
Here's my problem.
Uh-oh.
I had a perfect driving record, pretty much. Never got any speeding tickets, no accidents, nothing like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, in the last 2 weeks, I've been involved in 5 separate accidents.
Really?
Yeah. And along with that, even a couple of close calls that... wasn't really an accident, but close.
Maybe you need your eyes checked. Maybe your vision.
My wife suggested that, and I went to the eye doctor, and he checked it out, and I said I got 20/20 vision, so that doesn't seem to be the problem.
Huh, well, maybe that's a problem with your route to work. Can you tell me where you are right now?
Well, not really. I can't really see any. Any street signs or landmarks?
What's in front of you there? Is there a big truck or something in front of you blocking the highway?
Well, might be. I really can't.
What do you mean you can't tell what's in front of you? Just look right straight ahead there. What do you see? A big truck or?
I'm looking straight ahead and I can't see out because I'm seeing a big Garfield.
Wait a minute. You have the sun shield in your windshield while you're driving?
Yeah. Cool.
No, you're supposed... Caller, you're supposed to take that out of the windshield when you drive so you can see the road. Take that out of there immediately. Great. No wonder you've had so many accidents. Goodness gracious. Take that out of there.
Take the sunshield out of the window?
Yes. Take it out right now.
The car's going to get hot, isn't it?
No. Roll the windows down or something. Just get that out of there. You're going to have another wreck.
Oh, that's a good idea. Let me go ahead and reach up there. Get that out of the window. Oh!
Hello? Caller? Well, join us again next time on the Mr. Obvious Show. Thanks for listening.
I know, you're going, what was that? Well, actually, that was obvious. There was a radio show that was syndicated for a while. I don't know if it still is, but it was called The Bob and Tom Show. And a couple of guys did comedy bits as radio host Mr. Obvious and a dumb long-time listener, first-time caller. The role of Mr. Obvious was played by Chick McGee, and the role of the long-time listener, first-time caller, was played by Dean Metcalf. That routine was called Car Phone. And before that, Lily Tomlin with The Marriage Counselor from the album This Is a Recording. Earlier we heard about some doctors and... We're going to continue the medical direction of this show as Jackie Mason tells us all about his visit to the psychiatrist.
I told you before, mister, I don't care if you're left or not. He keeps staring at me. And it don't bother me. You know why it don't bother me? Because thank God I know who I am. And I'm proud of it. Because there was a time I didn't know who I was. I don't know if you heard about it. I didn't know who I was. I went to the psychiatrist. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I did. He took a look at me right away. He said, this is not you. I said, this is not me, then who is it? He said, I don't know either. I said, then what do I need you for? He said, to find out who you are. He said, together, we're going to look for the real you. I said, if I don't know who I am, how do I know who to look for? And even if I find me, how do I know if it's me? Besides, if I want to look for me, what do I need him? I can look myself. Or I could take my friends. We know where I was. Besides, I said to myself, what if I find the real me and I find that he's even worse than me? What do I need him? I don't make enough for myself. I need a partner. 10 years ago, I'd be glad to look for anybody. Now I'm doing good. Why should I look for him? He needs help. Let him look for me. He said, the search for the real you will have to continue. That'll be $100. I said to myself, this is not the real me. Why should I give him the $100? I'll look for the real me. Let him give him the $100. What if I find the real me? He don't think it's worth $100. Then I'm stuck my money with the real him. I said to myself, for all I know, the real me might be going to a different psychiatrist altogether. Might even be a psychiatrist himself. I said, wouldn't it be funny if you're the real me and you owe me $100? I said, I'll tell you what, I'll charge you $50 for quality.
That was Jackie Mason and the psychiatrist. I've always felt that Jackie's career was enhanced enormously by the so-called finger incident on the Ed Sullivan Show. For those of you who are not sure what I'm talking about, do a Google search and put in Wikipedia, Jackie Mason, and you can find out all about that. I think it made him a household name and bigger than he probably ever would have been. He sure is different, and when you speak of different, you also have to speak of Foster Brooks, America's lovable drunk. And some of his funniest comedy routines occurred when he appeared on the Dean Martin Celebrity Roasts on TV. And boy, this one was pretty funny. He was roasting none other than the host himself. Here's good old lovable Foster Brooks.
We used to sit there by the fire and everybody would talk about their everyone would talk about their ambitions. Dean's dream was to be a great singer. Mine was to be a great brain surgeon. I'm sorry your dream wasn't fulfilled. This Latin log could have been a gifted surgeon. He was the first scout to perform an emergency vasectomy. on a great horny owl. See, this day that owl is looking for you, Dean. You just walk through any Steubenville woods and you hear that bird singing pitifully. Dean was always a call. Dean was always a call. Ecology minded. He never used his scout knife on a tree that didn't pull a knife on him first. On our first overnight hike, Lou Dean got lost near the top of the mountain. I ran into town to find the sheriff and some deputies to pitch in and help us look. Unfortunately, we couldn't find a posse to pitch in. I'm glad I said that right. We searched both sides of that hilly terrain and never found him until now. And I'm glad to see that you're finally over the hill. I am proud to say that this undersexagenarian has lived the lesson the Boy Scouts taught him. Like helping ladies across the street, which he still does. Every week he sends a big check to a big buxom blonde in apartment 2A across the street. He has learned the most important rules of life. Be prepared. Be ready. Keep yourself physically straight, morally clean, mentally awake. And never hear that soft 17 unless she pulls the knife on you first. As I leave you, you may ask why all these nice people on this dais have given of their time and traveled many miles to Dean Martin. As I said before, it's a dirty job that somebody's got to do.
That was Foster Brooks roasting Dean Martin. I'm Ronnie Allen, and you're listening to Nutty But Nice. This is an SWN version, which means spoken word nuttiness. Coming up after this next pair of recordings, my tribute to one of the greatest game show hosts of all time. We'll hear a portion of what I believe to be the funniest game show episode ever, because of a single word uttered by one of the contestants. But right now, our show is going to take wings as we have a couple of routines about airlines. Leading off with Mr. No Respect himself, Rodney Dangerfield.
Any kind of traveling, I'm unlucky. I hate to fly. Whenever I fly, I never hear nice flight, smooth flight. Every time I fly, I live in a world of fog and air pockets. I always hear things like, we're going to have to bypass LaGuardia. And that's another thing. I never hear a pilot with a northern voice. It's always southern, you know? And I'll tell you, these southern guys are brave. Nothing bothers me. I remember one flight, we were in there about 10 minutes. Again, I heard a southern voice. He said, good afternoon. This is your pilot talking, Claude Wilkins. Welcome aboard Jet Flight 700. What's that, Tim? Oh, this isn't a jet. Oh. Well, anyway. Our destination is... Can you make that out, Tim? Well, anyway. We're now cruising at 22,000 feet. And we seem to be dropping. Hey, Tim, give me that list. Jones, Klein, Brown. Would Reverend Jackson please come to the cockpit? By the way, if you folks look out your right window, you see those trees down there all busted up? You see that wheel, that piece of charter propeller down there? Tim, were you with me on that flight? By the way, we're now cruising at 200 feet. And Tim says we're going to land way ahead of schedule. But right now, back to the movie. The Good Earth.
Ajax Airlines.
Ajax Airlines.
That's right, sir. The proud bird with a cast iron tail.
I start a commercial, Charlie Brown. I just want to know what time is your 11:06 leave for San Antonio.
It leaves at 11:06.
Okay.
We have tourist in first class.
Oh, that's all right.
In first class, you get an extra vegetable.
Huh?
You get an extra vegetable in first class.
Okay, I'll take an onion.
We're going to have some turbulence.
No. I'll stick with the onion. You serve Chinese food?
Yes, we serve everybody food.
You serve...
Sir, I really forget you said that.
You're one, ain't you?
Sir, let's get back to the flight now. This is a non-stop flight, you know.
How about your hostesses?
Oh, they're beautiful.
Are they topless?
No, sir, regulations. They must wear hats.
Do they mess around?
Look, do you want to go on this flight or don't you?
What's your movie?
No movie on this flight.
No movie?
No, sir, a rodeo.
That's fantastic. I bet you clean up on that, huh?
No, sir, the stewardesses take care of that.
Are they topless?
Sounds like you have a one-track mind.
Sounds like you never saw a topless horse.
Sir, please, look, I'm very busy.
And I'm Mr. Nobody, is that it?
No, I didn't say that.
But just remember, I'm a VIQ.
P.
Huh?
P. P. You're a VIP.
Well, then treat me like one, you communist.
Oh, sir, sir.
Hey, what's Tony like this time of year anyway?
Oh, it's beautiful. Is this going to be a round trip?
No way. I'm just going to fly down there and turn off, fly right back. Oh,
now we're getting nowhere.
Well, thanks to me.
Amen.
Boy, did I eat that onion already? Let me check this sucker out now. She leaves at 7:47.
Yeah, no. The plane is at 7:47. It leaves at 11:06.
Therefore.
Okay. Well, goodbye.
Hold it. Just a minute there.
Sir, I'm very busy.
Well, how about me? I'm running around like a chicken with my legs cut off.
Oh, boy.
Operator, would you chase this call and tell me where I am?
Sir, this is Ajax Airlines.
Cancel the call, operator. This is Ajax Airlines.
Ajax Airlines. Remember, it costs no more to relax in the heavenly skies of Ajax.
Well, now we're getting nowhere.
Thanks to you.
Amen.
Sir, you're holding up customers.
I'm holding up customers. Yeah, that charges your price.
Sir, I'm very busy. I've got 2 calls to make, 5 on hold, and 7 lines blinking.
And the partridge in the pear tree.
Well, that does it.
Well, it's about time.
It's about time.
Time? Oh, my gosh, time. What time does 11:06 leave for San Antonio?
In exactly 3 minutes.
Hold that plane.
I can't do that.
You better hold that plane.
Look, sir, don't threaten me.
I'm not threatening you. I'm just telling you, you better hold that plane.
Why should we hold the plane for you?
Because I'm a pilot.
That was Ajax Airlines featuring Hudson and Landry, best known for their Ajax liquor store routine. And before that, we heard Rodney Dangerfield flying Southern Comfort, with Comfort definitely being somewhat of a stretch, obviously, judging by that routine. Any rate, I am Ronnie Allen, and right now we salute a man who passed away a few days ago at the age of 79, much beloved by millions of people. Richard Dawson was an actor and a comedian. He played Corporal Peter Newkirk on Hogan's Heroes, and then later, in 1973 through 1978, became better known as a panelist on The Match Game, hosted by Gene Rayburn. And then he became best known as the host of Family Feud from 1976 through 1985, and again, 1994 and 1995. There are so many great moments from his wonderful career, but in my opinion, none more memorable than these. From the Fast Money portion of a Family Feud episode in which Richard Dawson totally lost it. It all started with the first Fast Money contestant giving a somewhat unexpected answer to the first question.
You did it once, you're going to do it again, aren't you?
Gonna try.
15 seconds, please. During what month of pregnancy does a woman begin to look pregnant?
September.
Something. Oh. Luckily, the clock doesn't start until I finish the... September, of course. It's so obvious, isn't it? It's kind of embarrassing. You have to reset the clock because I just laughed at her. For the rest of that, tell me when you're reset to 15.
Somehow, Richard was able to compose himself, and he and the contestant were able to get through the next four questions. And then the totally composed Richard Dawson brought on contestant number two to answer the same five questions.
Are you ready?
I think so.
Good girl.
Okay.
Well, just remind everybody, give me 20. If I talk, I'll be gone. Here we go.
Okay.
Good luck. Oh, this is for luck.
Oh, thank you. Good.
During what month of... Hold the clock.
I don't know how to take this.
I'm fine. We'll do it. Here we go.
Okay.
During what... I'm sorry, John, because it is important. There's money involved here, but just a second. I will,
Okay. I'm trying to concentrate.
All right.
Okay.
20. We got the 20. Got the 20 up, have we? Here we go. Hey, good luck. I told you good luck.
Yeah, I know.
Fine.
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay.
Sure. Here we go. First question coming up. Oh, God. Oh, here we go, darling.
No, this is
coming serious. Oh, I'm sorry, Don. While you were away, they sang Walter Houston's recording of September song, and it's very emotional to me. I always cry when the autumn leaves. Here we go.
Time's up.
Yes, I'm fine. No, we're probably fine. Here we go. Good,
okay.
Truly.
Okay.
Good luck. Good
okay.
Luck.
Thank you.
During what month of pregnancy? Come on. Here we go.
I'm dying to hear it. Maybe I shouldn't hear it.
No, here we go. I'll go.
Okay.
During what month of pregnancy does a woman begin to look pregnant?
Third man.
We will always remember, with fondness, the great actor, comedian, and game show host, Richard Dawson. Now, just imagine the commencement speaker at your graduation is Rosanna Dana. Well, imagine no more.
Dean Fader, faculty, graduating seniors, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. As president of the graduating class, it is my honor to introduce this evening's guest speaker. I must confess that we were a bit frantic this morning, as our originally scheduled speaker, Geraldo Rivera, suddenly fell ill and was forced to cancel. However, we were fortunate to find a most distinguished replacement. She is an award-winning broadcast journalist on the Weekend Update news team, and we do thank her for graciously accepting our last-minute invitation. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ms. Rosanna Dana.
Thanks. First of all, I gotta say it's an extreme pleasure, a thrill, a joy, a nap, and a real snappy surprise for me, Rosanna Dana, to give the commencement speech to the graduating class of the Columbia School of Journalism. At first, when they called me, 6:30 this morning, thanks a lot, I was real excited because I figured there's no greater honor than for an alumnus to give the graduating speech at his alma mater. But I guess I, Rosanna Dana, will have to wait for that honor because I found out your school is not affiliated with the Columbia School of Broadcasting. But anyways, you guys were like in big trouble because Geraldo Rivera was sick as a dog. So I figured why not come down here and talk to the young journalists of tomorrow? As I look out at your sweet, young, tender little journalistic faces with those stupid black flap hats on with little tassels hanging off of them, I can't help but know what you're thinking. You're probably saying to yourself, hey, I'm a college graduate. I spent a lot of time in school. What does journalism have to offer me? What do I have to offer journalism? What am I going to write about? What am I going to write with? Should I use a typewriter or a pencil? What kind of pencil? A number two pencil or one that writes darker? Where do I get these pencils? Does my boss buy them for me or do I have to buy them myself? And if I don't bring the pencils, am I going to get fired? And if I get fired, I'll starve. And if I starve, I'll die. And then what will I do? Class of 79, for college graduates, you sure ask a lot of dumb questions. But I know exactly what you're going through, because I remember when I first entered the field, I was real nervous. Imagine, if you will, an idealistic young Roseanne Banner, fresh out of the Columbia School of Broadcasting, looking for a job in journalism. I filled out applications, I went for interviews, and they all told me the same thing. You're overqualified, you're underqualified. Don't call us, we'll call you. It's a jungle out there, woman's place is in the home. Have a nice day, drop dead, goodbye. But I didn't give up. I mean, I went to see the head of personnel at CBS, the Tiffany Network, and he said to me, Ms. Rosanna Dana, I think you should look for work in the wonderful world of fast food. But I'm walking down the hall, and who do I see sitting in his office? But Mr. CBS Evening News himself, Walter Cronkite. And just between you and me, Rosanna Banner, you know what that big shot news guy eats for lunch? Luncheon meat on white bread with butter, with one piece of lettuce that got wilted from being between the meat and the butter so long? I mean, that big shot, hot shot news guy is eating pink bologna meat with white dots in it that you don't know what it is. And what are those dots? Is that cheese? It looks like a Q-tip or something in there. Anyways, I really poured on the Rosanna Banner charm. I showed him my resume, I made him a cup of coffee, I told him a lot of journalism jokes, and Cronkite says to me, hey, Roseanne, you should have a job here at CBS. Then, all of a sudden, this wooden chair that I'm sitting on makes a sound on the floor. Well, I thought I was gonna die. So then I tried to move the chair again to get it to make the same noise so he wouldn't think I'm no pig. And I moved the chair all over his office, and I couldn't get it to make that noise again. Well, I don't have to tell you, I was real down after that. I was depressed as a dog. But I didn't give up. I said to myself, R.R., yes, you can. I'm okay, you're okay. I'm my own best friend, my mother, myself. I have no fear of flying. I'm woman. Hear me roar. And I didn't give up, and I made it, and pretty big, I might add. So let me wrap this thing up and summarize and conclude real quick by saying, it just goes to show you, it's always something. If it's not one thing, it's another. Either you can't get a job in journalism, or Walter Cronkite thinks you're in his office. It's just like the little graduation song that my father used to sing to me when I was a little girl before I went to bed at night. He tucked me in all snug as a little bug in a rug and put powder in my arms and everything, make sure my toes are all tucked in and all. And he would sing to me this little graduation song written by my grandmother, Nana Rosanna Banner. And I'm going to sing it for you. Should all the acquaintance be forgot, I hope you'll hear my plea. Roseanne, my dear, you'll get a job if you listen to me. Just sit quite still and don't you move during your interview. 'Cause if you move, your boss will think the f*** came out of you. Good night, my little Roseanne Banner. Good luck, class of 79.
The great Gilda Radner. In the character of Rosanna Dana, that was from Gilda Live, her Broadway show. I'm Ronnie Allen, and this is Nutty But Nice, and this is our SWN Spoken Word Nuttiness Show, and we got just three more recordings to go. There have been a lot of comedy routines about Italian weddings. In my opinion, none better than this one. The man who was born to do Italian-American comedy and do it so well, Pat Cooper.
When you have a genuine to tell your mother, you better have a genuine to tell your father. Now, he waited for my 21st birthday, and he forced me to get married. He says that today you're 21. And today we think it's time that you got to marry. And we got a nice girl picked out for you. He called up Sicily 63720. And they shipped in a genuine Italian girl. 4'11". With a bun over here. Little needle here. Gold tooth here. Beauty mark here. Black dress, black stockings, and black shoes. I says, Papa, why they wear black? He said, in case anybody dies, they're ready. And my father ran the whole wedding. The kids today, they get away with murder. My father's the boss. We had a church wedding, 14 ushers, 14 bridesmaids. And my best man was a Puerto Rican. I didn't even know the guy. This is the truth. We're walking down toward the altar. He's singing, Taragacinte, they come to the altar. But do you think that stopped my father? He went one better. He shipped in from Rome, Italy, a genuine Italian priest with a bun over here, little needle here, and a gold tooth here. I went to my father and says, Papa, what are you doing to me? Papa, what are you doing to me? He says, did I tell you to shut up? And keep your mouth shut on your father. And remember, tonight is the big reception. You gotta go for 5,000, 10,000, 12,000, 30,000 for a catered affair. I don't make a novena for the affair that I got. My affair was called an Italian football wedding. Now, let me explain this thing for those who don't know what it is. Two Italians get together to get married. They rent out the hall, and then they rent out the sandwiches. And everybody jams in the hall, hear a guy yell out, Nunzio, try the provolone sandwich. Of course, they run the thing. Another guy, Angelo, a cup of cold cereal. And all night long, the sandwiches are going, ba-da-ding, 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 ba-da-ding. And we had a band. Now, this band here is great. We got stuck with my uncle Dodo's band. Three pieces. Two mandolins and one guitar. Now, that's not so bad, but all they knew was one song. And for 6 hours, this is the song we had to listen to. La da di da pa da ching za za, di da pa da pa da ching za za, di da pa da pa da ching za za. They had the greatest ching za za I ever heard. And the sandwiches, ba da ding, ba da dang, ba da dang, ba da. I ran to my father. Says, Papa, what are you doing to me, Papa? He says, did I tell you to shut up? He said, remember, they're coming now. I said, who's they? You got 2,000 people in the hall here at a buck ahead. I said, who else could you fit in there? He said, your kumar and your kumpar. I didn't even know I had any. Let me tell you something. There comes a time in every man's life when he's got to face up to his father. My time came that night. He says, Papa, put him up. Put him up. Put him up. He gives me a cocktail. I says, Papa, I don't drink. What am I going to do with the cocktail?
He said, why don't you make a speech?
I says, Papa, the people at this wedding don't understand English. He said, why don't you talk with your hands? I jumped up on top of a barrel of sandwiches. I looked in the crowd, hey, I said, this wedding cost me 600 scarolas, baby. Get those envelopes ready, kid. The line starts right over here. And my wife had the white gown on. She had the white bag where the scaffidoni goes in there. Next to her was her mother watching where the scaffidoni goes in there. And it's an amazing thing about the old weddings. They never let go of the envelopes. They look at you like an idiot. Gee, what a nice couple. We wish you all the luck of the world. You got to pull. Ba-da-ping, 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 ba-da-ping. And the kids singing, Mama. And the band, ba-da-dee-da-ba-da-ding, sats. And the sandwiches, ba-da-ding, ba-da-ding.
That was Pat Cooper and an Italian wedding. We have two more recordings, and both of them are about a sport that has been, over the years, referred to as our national pastime. I know there are some football fans who say that really football is our national pastime, But I think that most still consider baseball our national pastime because, after all, the baseball season is longer than the football season and also that of basketball and hockey. Be that as it may, to close off our show, we have two routines about baseball, leading off with one that is from the button-down mind of Bob Newhart. On our first SWN show, we heard the driver instructor, and now we're going to hear Nobody Will Ever Play Baseball. And after we hear that, what is arguably the most famous comedy routine of all time.
I got thinking about baseball and how games are marketed today. You know, you go to a game manufacturer, and they figure everything out and decide whether the game is right for the public or not, and then they market it. And it got me to thinking, supposing Abner Doubleday had called one of the game manufacturers with this new invention of his called baseball. Now, I think a phone conversation would have taken place something like this. Hello, Olympic Games. What can I do for you, Mr. Doubleday? You've got a game. How many couples? 18 people? There's a hell of a lot of people. Well, the ideal game is, I mean, two, three couples, you know, come over to the house, they get a little smashed, and, you know. You can't play it in the house either. See, you got two things right there against you. All right, tell me about it. You got nine guys on each side. Yeah. And you got a pitcher and a catcher. And they throw this ball back and forth. And that's all there is to it? All right. A guy from the other side stands between them with a bat. I see. And he just watches him. Oh, I see. He swings at it. He may or he may not swing at it. But depending on what? If it looked like it were a ball. What's a ball, Mr. Doubleday? You've got this plate. Uh-huh. And as long as it's above the knees, but below the shoulders. Yeah. No, go ahead. I'm listening. Yeah. It's a strike. Three strikes and you're out. And three balls. Not three balls. Four balls. Why four balls, Mr. Doubleday? Nobody's ever asked you before. Or he may hit it. If he hits it, what happens? He runs as far as he can before somebody catches it. As long as it stays what? As long as it stays fair. And what's fair, Mr. Doubleday? You've got these two white lines? Is this a rib? Is this one of the guys in the office? Mr. Doubleday, that's the most complicated game I've ever had in my life. Forget it. Right. Mr. Doubleday, listen, though. You come up with anything, two, three couples, you'll be sure and let us know. Huh? All right, Mr. Doubleday, I'll be done. Bye.
Well, Costello, I'm going to New York with you. You know, Bucky Harris, the Yanks manager, gave me a job as coach for as long as you're on the team.
Look, Abbott, if you're the coach, you must know all the players.
I certainly do.
Well, you know, I never met the guys, so you'll have to tell me their names, and then I'll know who's playing on the team.
Oh, I'll tell you their names, but you know, strange it may seem, they give these ball players nowadays very peculiar names.
You mean funny names?
Strange names, pet names, like Dizzy Dean and...
His brother Daffy.
Daffy Dean.
And their French cousin.
French?
Gouffet.
Gouffet Dean, oh, I see. Well, let's see, we have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You're going to be the coach too?
Yes.
And you know the fellow's name?
Oh, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name?
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
The guy playing
who
first.
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell
that's
me.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Look, you got a first baseman.
Certainly.
Who's playing first?
That's right.
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
All I'm trying to find out is the fellow's name on first base.
Who?
The guy that gets the
that's
money.
That's it.
Who gets the money?
He does, every dollar. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes. What's wrong with that?
Look, all I want to know is when you sign up the first baseman, how does he sign his name to
who?
The contract? The guy.
Who?
How does he sign his
That's
name?
That's how he signs it.
Who?
Yes.
All I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base.
No, what is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
One base at a time.
Well, don't change the plate as well.
I'm not changing nobody.
Take it easy, buddy.
I'm only asking you, who's the guy on first base?
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
I mean, what's the guy's name on first
base? No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Oh, he's on third. We're not talking about him.
How did I get on third base?
Why, you mentioned his name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
What's on first?
What's on second?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go, back on third again. Yes, will you stay on third base and don't go off it?
All right, I don't even know.
Now, who's playing third base?
Why do you insist on putting who on third base?
What am I putting on third?
What is on second?
You don't want who on second?
Who is on first?
I don't know.
Third base?
Look, you got outfield?
Sure.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Then tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
I'm not. Stay out of the infield! I want to know what's the guy's name in left field.
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base. And the left fielder's name?
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field.
He's in field. Look, you got a pitcher on the team?
Sure.
The pitcher's name?
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you,
then
man.
Go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow you're going to tell me who's pitching?
Now listen, who is not pitching?
I'll break your arm, you say, who's on first. I want to know what's the pitcher's name.
What's on second?
I don't know.
Third base.
Got a catcher?
Certainly.
The catcher's name?
Today.
Today. And tomorrow's pitcher.
Now you've got it.
All we got is a couple of days on the team. You know, I'm a catcher, too.
So they tell me.
I get behind the plate, do some fancy catching. Tomorrow's pitching on my team, and a heavy hitter gets up.
Yes.
Now, the heavy hitter bunts the ball. When he bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I'm going to throw the guy out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's all you have to do.
Is to throw the ball to first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
I throw the ball to first base, somebody's got to get it. Now, who has it?
Naturally.
Who?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
So I pick up the ball and I throw it to naturally.
No, you don't. You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's different.
That's what I said.
You're not saying that.
I throw the ball to naturally.
You throw it to who?
Naturally.
That's it.
That's what I said.
Listen, you ask me.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Now, you ask me.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's
same
it.
As you.
Don't change your
mind. Same as you.
Go ahead, now get it over.
I throw the ball to who? Whoever it is drops the ball and the guy runs a second.
Yes.
Who picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws it to, I don't know. I don't know, throws it back to tomorrow. Triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to because. Why? I don't know. He's on third and I don't give a darn.
What?
I said I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
I'm an idiot. Come on.
That was Abbott and Costello with one of their many different recordings of their legendary comedy routine called Who's On First. And before that, we heard Bob Newhart, Nobody Will Ever Play Baseball. And that is going to about do it for this edition of Nutty But Nice. My next Nutty But Nice show will be a normal one. Most of the recordings will be of the musical variety. And I'm going to have a special guest by telephone, Tom T-Bone Stankus, the man who wrote and sang the legendary Existential Blues, one of the most popular recordings ever played on the Dr. Demento Show.
Puppy! 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 Puppy!
Yeah, that's the one. I'm Ronnie Allen. I thank you for listening. And until we meet again, I will leave you with these words of wisdom. Before you criticize someone, walk a mile in his shoes. That way, if he gets angry, he will be a mile away and barefoot.
Say goodnight, Ronnie.
Good night, Ronnie.
I'm a nut. I'm a nut. My life don't ever get in a rut. The head on my shoulders is sort of loose, and I ain't got sense God gave a goose. Lord, I ain't crazy. I'm a nut.
The V, and that's all, folks.